Typically, I have people that buy my course. They have $60,000 to $80,000 in unsecured credit cards. And, of course, they have the credit problems. They spend the few dollars on my course and get rid of all that liability in the first year, and now they're working on their credit history, and they're almost back to where they were.
Wow.
And that's huge for a lot of people.
Okay, now the course we're talking about is a course called Winning the Collection Game. You have come up with a series of practical ways that people can go about getting themselves out of the debt that probably 80 or 85% of us are in right now, or eliminate their mortgage, which
right.
I bet just about all of us have. But I read some of your testimonials, and it was just, I was floored by what people were able to do with your information. I think a lot of people are going to say there's got to be something wrong about this.
It's motivating for me from what you mentioned about the different people that come back and tell me what their results are. I just get more motivated to keep on doing it.
I bet. Have you used these strategies yourself?
Well, that's the interesting thing. When I first heard that it was possible, I didn't believe the person that told me, and this is back around 1992, and I did the research because I didn't believe them. And at that time, I was beginning to have debt problems, and so I did begin using these types of strategies. Of course, it's evolved quite a bit since that time, but that's where it came from. The first letter I wrote was a 5-page long letter to a debt collector, and I got a response 5 days later from their attorney that said, sorry, we're closing your account, sorry we've bothered you.
Now, how much was this debt for?
It was like $3,200.
Wow.
And so then I thought, well, that was interesting because I'd never expected that. That was the first time I ever sent a letter like that.
That's amazing, and from what I've read in your report, it works most of the time.
Yes.
There's your debt elimination, and then there is consolidation and bankruptcy, and what separates what you do from consolidation and bankruptcy, which is really what most people know as the ways to eliminate their debt.
Sure, there's benefits to each one. For example, in bankruptcy, the best time to go into a bankruptcy, if that's what you want to do, is when you have nothing and not much regular income, or let's say when your balance sheet is close to zero or negative. Going into bankruptcy when you're current on all your payments is excellent because you have good credit except for a bankruptcy report, and you can still use your credit history pretty easily with other things like lease agreements and new cars and things like that. If you have bad credit already and you haven't been paying for 6 months or something, your credit looks pretty bad. If you go into bankruptcy, it just makes it that much worse, and it's 10 years. You're going to suffer with that.
Absolutely.
So a lot of people are in the situation where they're saying, well, bankruptcy is not an option for me. Plus, I have lots of property. If I go into bankruptcy, I'll lose a lot of that property, especially with the new legislation. So I'm just not going to pay, and I'll take my chances. So that's the person that I'm wanting to help, because they're already willing to say, I'm just out of it. I'm not going to pay anymore. But the consequences are, if you get sued, you don't really know what to do. You just default on the lawsuit, and then there's a judgment, and then the next thing is your employer gets a notice saying, I have to withhold this much money from your check. My course shows people how to back up from that situation of the worst-case scenario and make it better every day they follow this course. So there's that compared with bankruptcy. Then you have the debt consolidation. On the debt consolidation, I don't know if that's probably the worst option, in my opinion, than a bankruptcy or debt elimination. In consolidation, the problem there is if you stick with the program, you don't secure the debt with a second mortgage, which is a lot of them want you to do. You're turning an unsecured debt into a secured debt, which is never a good idea.
Right.
If you stick with the program, you're going to be in a good situation. The only problem is, let's say you settle for 60% on all your accounts. The 40% is going to be reported to the IRS as what's called imputed income. So you're going to be taxed on the amount that you didn't pay.
No kidding.
No, and they don't tell you that.
I was going to say, I'll bet there's a lot of people. I've never looked into the consolidation. I've thought of it many times. I never looked into it, and I'll bet that there's a lot of people that have no idea that they're going to accept that kind of tax liability, too.
They think it's a good thing because on TV you see these people having a great lifestyle, and they say, we're a nonprofit organization, and they have the red, white, and blue colors. They think it's great. Well, the truth is about 98% of the people that tried debt consolidation, if they qualify, never complete the program. So the consolidator, believe it or not, they're making $3,000 to $9,000 per customer. Even though it looks like you're not paying them, they're getting a chunk of money on the back end from the bank. So then you have the debt elimination. This is where we are. I'm saying, okay, look, if you can't pay, you don't want to pay, then here's what we do. Let's just mitigate the potential problems now by sending these letters, establish the reason why you're in this situation, and let's use some secrets that the banking system publishes all the time. Use it against the bank to show that you actually don't even owe them what they say you owe.
Yeah, that I found a little confusing. and we'll talk about that in a couple minutes. Mm-hmm. One of the things that comes to mind to me, and I'm definitely a type of person that believes you have to be able to look at yourself in your own mirror and answer your own God and answer to, you know, what you feel was moral for yourself, is would you consider this sort of really erasure of your debt an immoral act by any or anything, or you feel like it's kind of taking advantage of the banks, or?
That was my concern in the very beginning. That's why I started the research, because for this person that I trusted to tell me that I didn't have to pay and it was not immoral, I had to look into it. And what I found out was this. It would be just like if I came to you and I asked to borrow $100, and you said, I don't have $100 to lend you to go buy groceries, but I will tear off this piece of paper and write, I owe you $100, John, and you take that to the grocery store and they'll give you the groceries. And if I did that and the grocery store accepted that IOU, that's exactly what the banks are doing. You go to the bank for a loan and they're creating new currency. And the term they use in the industry is originating. So when you go for, let's say you apply for credit, $1,000 credit limit, the bank actually, let's give it in simple terms, opens a checking account for you with no money in it. And they say you can write a check on this account for $1,000. Even though there's no money in it, you go to write the check for $1,000, and the bank, because they control the system, they clear the check. That's what they're doing. And to keep your account going, you keep paying every month. So they're actually getting your money for free.
So they don't ever have the money.
They never have the money. Even the FDIC has no money.
And they're just told they have the right to create this currency so they can make money loaning it to people.
Right. And every time, let's say they create a $1,000 credit account for somebody, on their books it shows up as a receivable. To them, in other words, it's an asset. It's just like if you came into the bank and gave the bank $1,000 in cash for a checking account, it would still be a receivable to them. And the government says if you have that type of receivable, you can create that money all over again. You can do that up to 27 times. So that's why they really want people to borrow money from the bank, because that lets the bank create new currency, new receivables, have a bigger base of assets, which are not really assets. It's just a number on a ledger. And the government says, go ahead and do it again 27 more times.
Something about that just doesn't seem right. I mean, it doesn't seem like they should be able to do that. I had always assumed, and I think I'm pretty much like Joe America, you know, the rest of the guys out there, is that the bank has the money because people are putting their savings with them and that sort of stuff, and they're loaning me their money, you know, that they've held on and that they're paying them an interest on so they can use their money to me, because I don't have the money, they're going to charge me a lot more than what they're paying them.
Well, that's the funny thing. The banks are actually prohibited from lending other people's money.
So where would they get the money?
They create it from nothing.
Okay, that makes sense. Now we hit on it there. Now we hit on the real key. They can't take that money that I give them and put in my savings account.
They really can't, no.
So they have nowhere else to go to get the money, because they really, I mean, they're not flipping burgers in there and serving fries and stuff. So that they're not collecting any money somehow.
Unless you have a specific written agreement with the bank that says, yes, you can use my money to lend it out at an interest rate, and I'll pay you interest for that to use your money, it's not going to work. And the only people that usually have that kind of money are people that are having on deposit $100,000 or more.
Yeah.
And those accounts are assured for $300,000. You know, those are business accounts. It's not the average consumer. Sure. The trick is, how do I take this information and use it to Billy Bob law firm that wants to sue for my credit card company because I can't pay.
Right. Now, you say that the bank's information, they publish all the time.
They actually do. The Federal Reserve Bank of Chicago is great for it.
Do they publish it in reports to people? Or?
They have a report they were publishing for like 40 years up until the year 2001, 2 years ago, because I had all my subscribers asking for it. And they actually sent me an email saying, stop having your subscribers ask us for that. And they discontinued publishing it because we were using it in court against the bank's attorneys.
Oh, no kidding.
The commercial banks, yeah. The name of the publication is Two Faces of Debt. And it admits right in the document that the banks are doing what I just said. They're creating money from nothing. And because I took that information, and because it's a public document, the court has to hear it. The court has to review it. And then they didn't like that, and the banks must have contacted them and said, hey, they're using your publication. So what I did is started publishing it in my course, because they stopped publishing it.
Oh, no kidding. So you have this in your course, this
right.
Letter to pay, or this report on Two Faces of Debt.
That's right.
Oh, so people can then use that when they go to court and say, look, with the Bank of, you said with the Bank of Chicago, or?
Right, I'm not making this up. The Bank of Chicago said the banks do this, all the commercial banks, including the plaintiff.
So this is just like a reprint of their report.
It is their report.
That's amazing.
If you read some of the congressional records, you'll find out that Congress has had debates every year about the banking system because there's some congressmen and senators that don't want it. And they're up there touting the truth, and they're saying, we can't let this continue because it's destroying our economy. And the only way the cycle continues is if the government continues to collect the federal income tax and people continue to get credit from banks. That's the only thing that makes the system breathe and continue.
What does it have to do with them collecting income tax?
The federal income tax is actually collected by the Federal Reserve Bank.
Okay.
It's not collected by the U.S. Congress.
Right.
The way the money gets into the government is the Congress prints up bonds, and the Federal Reserve Bank, which is a private bank, accepts those bonds as payment for new currency. So if we have a $1 billion budget next year, the Congress writes up bonds or promissory notes that they promise that they'll collect taxes from the citizens and that the citizens will continue to pay. And in exchange for that, the Federal Reserve says, okay, we'll create $1 billion Federal Reserve notes now and put it into circulation. And the way they do it is they don't print up $1 billion Federal Reserve notes. What they do is, when I say Federal Reserve note, I mean dollar. They 3% of it is printed on paper in certain denominations and coined, and the 97% of it is put into the computer databases and circulated throughout the country and the world in the banking system.
So the banks then are allowed to make only so much money?
Pretty much, yeah. They're allocated a limitation. You'll see in Two Faces of Debt, there's a limitation on how much money they can create.
Wow.
But it's enough to, you know, raise our cost of living by about 3% a year.
Well, yeah, because we're just falsely creating money. There's this money doesn't exist.
Mm-hmm. It's just like if you want to see this in how it works, why does real estate appreciate in value? It does not appreciate in value. It's that the value of the Federal Reserve notes, the dollar, depreciates every year.
Okay.
Unless you have a unique piece of property that's owned by a famous person or in a particular place of where it's just been built, it appreciates right away beyond the 3%. But typically we have the gold price goes up, not because gold value goes up, but because the Federal Reserve note value goes down.
Wow.
Listen to the news. I heard on that one news report a while back that they said the cause of inflation was that certain industries were raising their prices. But that's what happens. That's the effect. The cause is creating money from nothing.
Right. Right. It really causes people to overextend themselves.
Well, that's the whole idea. It's just like the guy that sells marijuana or cocaine to the high school children or the elementary children
at
the school when they let out for school. He gives it to them for free.
Get them hooked.
Apply now for your credit. No application fee.
Oh, yeah, and I feel certain they target the college students and that sort of stuff.
Oh, you wouldn't believe what they do on that.
I bet.
But it's a drug. It's people don't understand in their brain how compound interest works. So this is a neat thing. I can go buy stuff on this piece of plastic, and then later on it just gets me later, and I'm not ready for it.
I think you're right. I think people really don't understand that the kind of liability you take when you pull that piece of plastic out.
The lesson I learned once I got out of my debt problems, and I didn't have a lot of debt, but I had enough that it was bothering me. Once I got out of it, and I reestablished my credit history, and I went and got more credit. And I have credit cards, but I pay the balance every month.
Right. Yeah, that's the only card I will use is my American Express card, because I have to pay it every month.
There you go. That's the best way to do it.
Yeah, I agree. So let's go back sort of the practical things. I think you've given us a real good history as to the detail as to why this works, and you obviously really know what you're talking about because some of it's over my head, just because it's really complex and it's controversial in that we've all been taught by the news, by our parents, who were probably taught by their parents, a different way of thinking,
mm-hmm.
and a different way than what the truth really is, apparently.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've all figured that the banks have these almighty, powers to, and all this money to give us, whereas that's not happening at all. There's nothing to do with it. If I'm in debt, I owe, let's say it's Chase Manhattan Bank, for my car loan, and then I have a house, a mortgage, and maybe I have an equity loan on my house, and I've got a couple different credit cards and that sort of stuff. Practically, if I'm looking at all this debt in front of me, I've got, between my mortgage and everything else, $150,000, $200,000 in debt. I get your system. I use it. I think, what's the odds that, let's say, 99% of that is going to be washed away?
I like to undersell it, and I tell people that you can eliminate 90% of that unsecured debt without payment using my strategies.
Okay, so unsecured debt. So it wouldn't be like a car loan and it wouldn't be a mortgage.
Right, we put those into a different category because the process is different.
Okay. Yeah, I read that. It seemed like the process takes a lot longer for secured debt.
It will, yes.
But it's worth sticking with it if you can get yourself out of, you know, a couple hundred to, or 50 to a couple hundred thousand dollars, $300,000 to $400,000 in debt.
You know, the nice thing is lots of people that have credit card problems are looking at eventual problems with paying their mortgage. Most people will pay their mortgage payment first.
Yeah.
But if you can't pay anything, I know people that get in this program and they're paying $600 collectively on their unsecured debt. Once they get in the program, they stop making those payments. What do they do with that $600 a month? That's a lot of money for people that they can apply towards things that they need to apply it to.
Sure, they can pay their, even if they just wanted to pay their mortgage.
Absolutely. You know, it's not benefiting them to keep paying the credit card companies.
Right.
Especially if they're just making minimum payments. In reality, if you follow the course guidelines in the beginning, reduce your chance of being sued by a creditor from about 40% down to 3%.
So what's the chances if I just say, you know what, I'm going to start throwing these bills away, I'm going to not answer my phone when people call, you know, what's the chances that they're going to come out and sue you?
Yeah, like I said, it's about 40%.
So there's a 40% chance they will see. And I think people think it's probably more like about 100%.
Yeah, a lot of people are afraid. One guy asked me the other day, he said, am I going to get arrested?
Yeah.
It was a new person. He was just considering this course, and he didn't know what to expect. He was totally new, didn't even understand the banking system. And he says, are they going to come out and arrest me? Is that the next step? And it's never like that.
Oh, no. This
is a civil matter.
So we got rid of debtor's prisons a long time ago.
Man. That's right. So that's where people are, you know, and it was a brilliant idea for the banks to create the credit reporting system. I believe they did that.
Yeah.
So that they can keep people in check, so to speak. A lot of people will pay a lot of money to keep their credit good.
Yeah.
And the banks don't have to sue people. Your chances of being sued were a lot less because most people were paying because of their credit history. And then most people were making payments because they went into debt consolidation. That was a big thing in the 90s.
Right.
It got popular, and then people realized it really wasn't a viable thing after a while. But the few cases that went to court, we would just file one document, and the attorney would never show up again, and they would lose because they weren't expecting some grandma to file a document that looked like Ben Matlock wrote it. You know, and so they're coming in there with a $50 retainer they got from the bank, thinking that they can just get a default on 27 cases that morning, and grandma shows up demanding a jury trial with a counterclaim.
Wow.
And they can't. It's another $5,000 they got to spend just to fight this case and the chance that they might win.
Yeah, to collect their $3,500.
There you go. And so most of the time they just withdraw. And that's where we win most of our cases. The court never even looks at it. In fact, most of the people that do this stuff, even if it goes to court, never even show up at a hearing.
Wow.
Because it's all through the mail.
I think a lot of people are afraid of what they don't know. They're afraid to go to court. Everyone equates court with something bad. You know, bad things happen in court.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people go to jail in court. People lose their houses in court, their kids, their family, that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
They feel like, I think, as a regular just citizen, you feel like, I mean, you're told you have a lot of rights, but you don't understand your rights. So you feel like you really don't have a lot of rights once you get to court. Whenever you're looking up with the judge, and he's looking down at you, and the other guy's pointing his finger at you.
Well, this course puts it into reality for you. When you go through this thing, you're going to go, okay, I see. They're people just like I am, and they have a set of rules they have to follow. In fact, they're scrutinized more than the consumer is. They have to follow these rules. There are certain things they can't do. They can't call me after hours and ask for money. They can't call my neighbor and tell him that I owe money. They can't call my employer and harass him. Once you see this, how it pans out, you'll find out that there is actually a level playing field. There's a system of rules that everybody has to comply with. And we use the fact that the bank didn't lend anything to make them prove their case, and they can't.
Well, even though you said I'm borrowing this from the bank, and I signed a document saying that I'm borrowing this and I'm going to pay it back, you, with your documents, the way that they're written, and with the knowledge that your course equips people with, they can go in and fight that and prove that the bank didn't loan them anything.
That's correct. And for the people that are thinking about this, their wheels are turning and they're going, okay, well, if the bank didn't lend me anything, what does that make me?
Right.
And in reality, or if you ask a CPA to look at the accounting record, it's called the account general ledger that the banks maintain for your credit card account.
Mm-hmm.
It looks just like your checkbook statement where you put in, you know, credits and debits every month. It makes the customer the lender. The bank is the borrower.
How is that?
That when the customer promises to pay and gives the bank a piece of paper or a credit application or a promissory note,
yeah,
to the bank, that's like handing them a stack of cash. Because they're a bank, they can take your signature and use it to go buy groceries, essentially. if you or I were to do that, it doesn't work that way. Like owner financing on a house,
yeah.
you have to wait to get your money. But if I'm a bank, I can create the money today and go pay the seller of the house, all of it. So the customer, the bank customer, is always the lender. And that's what we ask the bank. We, in our questions, if the court makes them answer, we say to the bank, did you lend money? Admit that you lent nothing, for example. The bank will always come back and deny that. They'll say, of course we lent something. And then the next question is, all right, if you denied that, that you didn't lend anything, then show us where the money came from. Show us the account that was debited when our credit account was opened. And they can't. And that's where we get them.
Interesting.
There has to be a money trail, and there isn't.
That's really phenomenal. Once you go through all these things, and you've done this, you've sent these reports to people, or you've asked them to stop calling you and stop harassing you, and you don't want it, and you have nothing to do with this anymore, can you expect that somebody, the other 10% of people are going to sue you? Like a 10% that you don't get cleared?
Oh, yeah. There's a percentage, like I said, that there's a small percent that's going to sue you. You can almost bet on that. If you've got 10 accounts, expect to get sued once or twice.
Okay.
With our system, expect that those lawsuits will end up in a dismissal.
Okay.
And again, I like to undersell it. So let's say if you do get sued, your chances of winning are 50%.
Your system would teach me to, you know, what I'd have to do if I was sued. How do I handle this? Mm-hmm. How do I handle myself when I do eventually get my 20% of my time get sued?
Mm-hmm.
And then at least one of those should be dismissed. And then the other one I'll have to keep paying, am I imagining?
Well, here's what happened. Let's say they got a judgment against you.
Yep.
Most of the time it sits on the public record and just accrues interest, and then it expires. Believe it or not, nothing happens. For some reason, I think the bank just wants the judgment. It's a piece of paper recorded. Once that happens, I think they're able to claim it as a loss on their tax return,
yeah.
and it benefits them, just the paper itself, even if they never collect from you.
So they don't keep coming after you for the money?
No, not always, but that's a lot of our cases. If we have a case where someone got a judgment against them, then it comes down to whether or not that person is an employee. The only time they're going to try and collect from your paycheck is if you're a W-2 employee. If you're an independent contractor, there's almost no chance they're going to collect from you because you have control over your paycheck.
Okay.
You don't have to receive your paycheck in your name. As an employee, you have to get paid in your name.
Wow.
In other words, you can't do asset protection as an employee
right.
for that particular income. So, we show you what to expect. For example, a lot of people like to, I call it the crystal ball question. They ask me, what are my chances of, and they, what are my chances of being, garnished, my wages being garnished. And so we have a list of things, a criteria that you can look at and see what are the chances if you want to consider that. So, for example, your chances are increased of being sued if you're a licensed professional, if you're a doctor, a chiropractor, if you've been in business for a long time, if you own a retail brick-and-mortar business, chances are, and it's in your name, chances are you have a good probability of being sued.
Is that just because they figure you have something they can take?
Exactly.
Okay.
That's the only reason. If you're a homeowner, which we can fix that, we can make you a non-homeowner like myself. I'm not a homeowner, but I live in a nice house. We don't have to own things that we live in or use.
You have a corporation that owns the house?
Right, exactly.
And then you lease it from that? Or?
Exactly.
Okay.
So that divests my interest in the property, and no one can ever attach any interest that they have against me into the property. In other words, there's ways to become judgment-proof, but my course is designed for people that have regular W-2 employment income to protect that property. The rest of it we can fix through asset protection techniques.
Okay.
Once you eliminate your liabilities, then you can start building your assets.
Okay.
You can't build your assets without getting rid of your liabilities first.
Now, you mentioned that you've talked to some of your clients, the people that have bought your course in the past, since you've been doing this, and they've asked you different questions. When someone gets your course, you give them any sort of tutelage along with it, or can they ask you a question? Can they get email support from you or anything? Or
you can pick up the phone and ask us a question. You can send over an email, and you'll get an auto response back that says, we got your email, and we'll get back with you like within a day. Usually it's within 3 minutes. Right?
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
Anyway, that gives somebody a lot of feeling like if they get confused, they have a place to go at least.
Yeah, the nice thing is now we have this thing online so that as new revisions are published, you just go online or you'll get an email saying, hey, go check out Chapter 3. We did this new thing and it works great and it's all there.
Oh, so as you come up with different case studies, they then have access to it to say, hey, this is how John Jaworski eliminated this for the credit card company. It was a new technique or a twist on our technique.
Exactly.
We can try this too.
Yeah, we can tell them what to watch out for, and it doesn't cost them anything.
Can this affect your credit rating in any way?
It definitely will. It's going to diminish your credit rating. Just like whenever you don't pay on a credit account, your credit's going to suffer.
Okay.
And this course does not promise that your credit's going to look great when you're done. The letter writing part of the course does set it up so that you can have a better chance of fixing your credit. You can use some of the dispute letters that we do in the very beginning of the course. Like we send a notice of final payment. The terms on that notice allow you to fix your credit history. Part of the course involves commercial arbitration, and most of the time it's in favor of the consumer because the banks won't participate in that. And we can use that arbitration award to fix the credit. We can also send a request for validation or verification to the creditor or the debt collector, and most of the time they're not prepared to validate or verify the account, or they don't respond within a time frame they're required to.
Mm-hmm.
So we can use that non-response with Equifax, for example, and say we asked for validation on this item, and they failed to answer within the 30 days they're required to by law, and so please remove it or fix it.
This is the end of part one. Please continue to part two.